You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Colson. This is Minute 71. And this minute opens with Shaw saying, "This is not good, baby," and ends with Shaw saying, "Just do it," to Vickers as the crew races back to the Prometheus. And once more, I'm joined by Niall of Bat Minute 89.
Oh, hi, Connor. Thanks for having me back. I was just thinking, because we're just talking briefly off mic there about connection between the UK and Australia, because I'm an Irish person currently living in the UK. But one of our most frequent guests on Bat Minute is actually an Australian lady called Dale Kingsmill. She's from, I believe, Wollongong, which when I first heard that, I was like, that has to be made up. That's too Australian a name of a place to actually exist.
Wollongong, yeah.
But I first came across her as because she used to do mythology videos for the Geek and Sundry Vlogs channel. And the very first...
Oh, her!
Yeah, yeah. Dale's great. She's really, really great, great guest. And the very first video she ever did for Geek and Sundry that I remember being like, "Oh, I like her, subscribe," was the story of Prometheus. So there you go.
Hell yeah. Yeah, Prometheus, I definitely have a lot more fascination and connection to that story. I think it's brilliant, and I have talked about it in only one episode, actually. I broke down the history of Prometheus and the myth, but there's a lot to it. I really had to condense it, so maybe it's time to revisit our old pal Prometheus at some point.
Yeah, it's weird, though. Again, it could be a generational thing, because Prometheus, to me, makes me immediately think of Prometheus and Bob. I don't know if you ever saw that.
No.
It's great. It was part of a very odd cartoon kind of collection show called...
Holy shit, this is a weird-looking show. I'll have to put this in the footnotes.
It was for a thing called... a show called Kablam, which had, like... It was like a comic book, basically. It'd have, like, your two main hosts of the show, and then they'd have, like... Well, it wasn't so much like a comic. It was more like you're flipping around the TV. And one of the other shows is called, like, Action League Now, where they just had, like, little action figures that were, like, the Justice League.
So a little bit of an Adult Swim type ensemble.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But one of the recurring bits was characters called Prometheus and Bob, which was a claymation show where an alien came down to Earth and decided to teach a caveman how to evolve. And so there'll be episodes where he's like showing the caveman how to use a toilet and stuff like that. And then there's a little monkey running around. And it was always just like, there was never any dialogue because the caveman can only grunt. And then Prometheus would always speak in this kind of like... and it was all just physical comedy, but it was great.
Yeah, it looks great.
And for the longest time, I just thought Prometheus was just like a weird alien name. And it was only years later that I was like, no, it's from a myth of like the god who created humanity. And then when Zeus was pissed off, he took away a lot of stuff. And then Prometheus was like, hey, I like humanity. I'm going to give him fire back. And, you know, all this sort of stuff that happened.
That's like Nimrod. You know, you'd think Nimrod, most people, they think of it as an insult. It means you're an idiot. Mm. Because Bugs Bunny used it one time.
Yeah.
But Nimrod is actually, if I recall correctly, a Babylonian hero akin to Hercules or someone like that. So it's just like, oh, that's a bit... unfortunate.
That's good.
That's your legacy.
Okay, well, I'm not even a big fan of the band, but Nimrod makes me instantly think of Green Day. I'm like, oh yeah, that's that one Green Day thing.
I've actually not said this on air, but this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately, is that the storyteller is not the only one telling the story. And by that I mean every individual watching a movie, reading a book, it can only perceive it through their own history of perception, of experiences. And so that's why I love discussing film so much, and even discussing names and the etymology and our associations with it, because it couldn't be more different in some cases.
I do like to think that maybe Ridley Scott wasn't thinking of the Prometheus myth. He was just like, I've had this idea of like, what if the aliens came down and started messing around with humanity? It'd be a bit like Prometheus and Bob, that thing from Kablam. And that's what he was going for the whole time. Within them using Kablam, using surprisingly sophisticated for 90s children's cartoon to be referencing the Greek
90s
myth.
90s kids' cartoons were top tier, just another level, so smart.
Yeah, yeah. But for them to be referencing the myth of Prometheus was going over the kids' heads. I'm sure maybe like more educated adults watching, we're like, oh, I get what they're going for here.
Yeah.
But it's the thing is that I think the metaphor, it's clearer in that cartoon, because it's like, yeah, God coming down, messing about with humanity, trying to make them better and stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas in this one, it's kind of like God, they created, the engineers created humanity, and then they instantly, well, not instantly, millennia later have now turned on them.
Yeah.
And you're like, because it's not, the, at the end, they're more in the Zeus role of the myth, where it's just like, no, I hate humanity. We're going to take, we haven't seen any of the, beyond the cave paintings, you don't see them down trying to elevate, you know, their creation and stuff.
Yeah, and that's actually, you're on the money there, at least from my perspective, because that's my theory, is that the engineers we encounter might not be the ones that created humanity. They might be, I have this idea, and it's around in the fandom, that there's more than one faction or race of engineers. So one creates, the other destroys, or we don't know. There's some complicated alien politics going on. And so, yeah, maybe the engineers that we see are a bit more of a Zeus figure, or that we're dealing with, my other theory was, or interpretation was, angels. So you've got fallen angels and you've got, you know, your divine angels. So just because they're the same in appearance doesn't mean they're the same in intention.
I also was kind of thinking, you never know, maybe if they do a third film, it might be a thing to bring up again. But because at the end, the climax of you know, the myth of Prometheus is that, you know, he's chained to a rock, and then a hawk comes down and eats out his liver every day, and it magically regrows, and then the same thing happens over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like Ridley Scott could have been doing, like, you could have done something with like a chest burster or something, with like, oh, come out the side. It's alluding to the bird eating out the liver. It seems like a thing that he could have worked in. But you never know. They could be like, David and Daniels go to the engineer home planet, and there is an engineer, but it's continually having something that's been mined. Or they're all have, there's a bunch of them chained to rocks, and they've all had kind of creatures burst out from where their liver would be or something.
Yeah, whatever this Prometheus refers to is something that they're holding back on. I really do feel like, oh, that's where the big conclusion was, where we'll find out who is the Prometheus in this analogy. Because it is all about creation, but it seems to be more along the lines of Frankenstein or the modern Prometheus.
Oh, yeah.
So in this analogy, you could almost say, well, is it David creating the xenomorph even? We really don't know what Prometheus refers to, even though on the surface you go, oh, it's about, you know, aliens giving, or gods giving fire to humans, right? No, well, if you really break it down, we don't know for certain.
Yeah. So it's like, now it's just like, give him the money, Fox. Give him the money to make another damn movie.
Yes. Just let him finish.
I will say, though, within the content of the minute, it's so strange for me, because I was first introduced to Idris Elba as Stringer Bell in The Wire.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, didn't realize he was an English actor. But now hearing this American accent coming out of him, it's just like, what? No, that doesn't sound right.
Interesting, because I saw him in Luther first, I think. Yeah, because that was 2010. So, yeah, I was a bit confused by the American. He does a very good American accent, but I was a bit confused by it.
Yeah, I think it was just more like, because, yeah, so many years I just assumed that, like, yeah, this guy, he is an American man. That's why he's in The Wire. And then you find out, like, 70% of the cast of The Wire aren't American. So then I'm used to that. I don't know how much permanence he's got in Australia, but the UK is in love with Idris Elba at the minute.
Oh, everyone's in love with Idris. The whole planet's in love with Idris Elba.
It's almost,
he's a beautiful man.
it is great. It is getting to a little bit of a point, though, because he's on like adverts over here. He's on the sides of buses. He's doing rap songs. He's friggin' everywhere. It's kind of getting to a point of like, Idris, you need to just not be on my TV for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, just calm down. It's a little bit like Keanu Reeves. Like, I love both of these guys, but steady on. Like,
yeah.
Internet. We've had enough.
It's like, don't, you know, the thing, problem with the internet is once something goes up, it's got to come down heavy. So like, everyone loved Jennifer Lawrence for the longest time. And now there's a lot of people really hate Jennifer Lawrence for just being the same person she always has been.
Yeah,
and stuff.
It's brutal.
And I can imagine this time next year, they'll turn on Keanu. Like, he won't have done anything. The internet will just have got a faction that just hates him now for some reason.
I've been trying to figure out what Jennifer Lawrence did. Like, everyone seems to have turned on her, and it's like nothing has changed.
It could be that she was just too saturated. She was just too everywhere. The people were just like, I don't like her face anymore. Mm. I don't like seeing her around. And that's why I worry for it.
Scarlett Johansson gets that a bit too. Where it's going, Scarlett's great. She's a great actress. She's beautiful. But some people are just like, oh, I can't stand her. Why? I'm just everywhere.
It's the same with
everything.
Anne Hathaway. People hated Anne Hathaway. It's only she's coming out of it now because people are remembering, oh, Anne Hathaway was popular for a reason. It's because she's a very charming person and she's a great actress.
I love her and she's a great Catwoman. She did a great job. I love, sorry to tangent, but as Catwoman, where she plays up that sort of defenseless woman sort of thing, like, oops, I didn't realize it was unbreakable, you know?
I think I liked her as a casting choice. I just don't think that they did enough with her in Rises.
Always happens with these Batman movies. It's like Two-Face could have done so much more with that, but he's dead now.
But I think too, because Nolan was trying to play down some of the campiness of inherent in the character, whereas Tim Burton is like, you can have the Penguin and Catwoman in a movie and they both feel like they've got enough time on screen.
Yeah, it is really well balanced.
But like, and they really leave an impact because they ain't back. Like friggin' Danny DeVito, he's going for it with the Penguin, and Michelle Pfeiffer is going for it with Catwoman. She is doing full on.
I remember I was like, I don't know, 14, and when we had cable, you know, you could record things. So I would always record Batman Returns, and I'd just skip straight to the Catwoman bits. Close the blinds. No. I was so in love with her. I love Catwoman.
Yeah, it's a bizarre thing. Like, in having finished the season now, where it's like we've had to cover the fact that like for years they tried to have a Michelle Pfeiffer Catwoman spinoff and stuff. And Dan Waters has said, the guy who wrote the Returns and wrote a draft of a Catwoman script, one of his things was like he bumped into Michelle Pfeiffer at some function after it was just like the project was dead. And she was just like, why? Why did this happen? And it's looking back and it's like, how could you let that get away from you? Like, such a great actress, such a great role. She was up for it.
Makes me so mad.
It's like, somehow you just couldn't get that together. Like, what the hell's the matter with you, Hollywood?
Well, it was like, how many years later, like 20 years later, they make a Catwoman movie, but oh boy.
I think, I imagine now though, if they were like, they were to say, like, oh, animated movie, you mightn't get Tim back because I think he's just done with Batman.
Mm.
But, like, Michael Keaton, Michelle Pfeiffer, I have no doubt that they would both be like, oh, we'll come back to do the voices for Catwoman. And of course, Billy Dee Williams, he can finally, I know the Lego Batman movie gave him a little smidge, but you know, he's just like, just let me play Two-Face. Just now, the world wants it. Just let it happen.
Yes. Also, Lego Bane is adorable. I love his voice.
I think that's we call him Doug Benson, isn't it?
Yeah,
But yeah, every single time he spoke in that movie, it was just like a guaranteed laugh because it's just him doing the Tom Hardy Bane voice.
Oh, that was unnecessary.
Yeah, that guy's voice, Bane, was never good for any other job. You couldn't have Bane be anything else but a crazy villain man. Because, you know, it's, oh, would you like the full combo? Or just the sandwich? Never. It's not good. Children, I'm your new babysitter. There will be no lights on in the house. Enjoy the darkness. I was born in it. I was raised in it.
It's just like, if nothing else that Tom Hardy's done, it's like he gifted that voice to the world. He's like, it's like, all right, you know, if I'm never remembered, they'll at least remember. They'll remember this as a choice I made.
So where are we? Got some notes about makeup, which I don't talk a lot about makeup, or at least so far we haven't had a lot of prosthetic stuff to talk about other than the engineers. So Holloway, they've made him pale, kind of sweaty, his eyes are red, and there's veins visible on his skin. Now, that veined look is so common with infection makeup. You know, look at the Walking Dead or even Supernatural, like demonic possession. It's everywhere. But I was looking into it, and in real life, there are almost no illnesses that would present a symptom like that, or at least not to that extent.
Mm.
Like anemia, anorexia, the veins are more obvious, but it's not like that.
I think it's just maybe it's more like it's a psychological thing in that, you know, veins are to do with circulation. So in your head, if something's infecting you and you see the veins pronounced and it looks like there's something wrong with them, it's conveying more that this thing is spreading throughout the entire body rather than, you know, like you could have given him like jaundice and people will be like, why is he like, oh, okay, something's up. Whereas the pronounced veins all over everyone's just like, oh, this thing is literally spreading throughout his body right now and stuff. You can kind of see it happen.
Yeah, it is. It is really disturbing. It's, it reminds me of, I mean, this is probably because it was like my earliest association. In the first X-Men movie, that senator who gets the... He's mutated, but then he just sort of falls apart as a puddle of water.
Yeah, becomes like Water Man or something.
Ooh, not good. Like a Reed Richards that didn't go right. But yeah, he went all veiny and sweaty and stuff. And so, yeah, even as a little kid, you just inherently know, God, that looks wrong. That looks like something is destroying him from the inside out.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
Maybe it's because it's not a terrestrial virus. So maybe in this case, it's... There's like mutagen in his veins, so you're seeing it more because it's literally just his blood is black now.
Yeah, oh, that's what I totally imagine is that it's turning his blood into something else. So it's that's why it's, and then maybe it's like expanding the veins up so they're popping up. But it's creepy to talk about almost than to actually analyze. Like, oh, so body horror. Let's go through this in grim detail of exactly what's
welcome
happening.
Welcome to Prometheus by Minute, where your worst nightmares come to life.
That is the thing. I think it would be too depressing a movie to do, but if I were to ever do like a Cronenberg The Fly minute by minute,
you'd spend
so much time. It's like, what do you think's happening on his head there? Like, what weird fly thing is going on underneath where it has this random bump oozing out of there? Then you do the whole bit.
It would get very pathological very quickly.
You get into things because, like, at the end of that movie, it turns out like his whole head falls apart and he's got like other eyes underneath. So you're like, were there eyes in the eyes he was having when he was Jeff Goldblum? They're still functioning eyes, but he's got secondary eyes behind them. Have they just not woken up?
That's the moment that sort of broke the reality for me, where I just it raised too many questions. Where it sort of seemed feasible up until that point.
I just got in the flash of Batman Forever, though. I was like, oh, raises too many questions.
I was thinking the exact same thing, and I went, I'm not... You guys aren't talking about Val Kilmer, so I guess I won't talk about Val Kilmer.
I just imagine now, though, me making this fly minute by minute out of spite and just like, questions, Mr. Coulson! You have too many questions! Why hasn't anybody put you in your place?
Oh, the fly minute with doctors reviewing it, that would be fascinating, or morticians, or someone who's seen some real fucked up stuff.
Now I'm hurtling towards, like, maybe it should be a thing. I know it would be really depressing subject matter, but like, it would be still pretty interesting, though.
I mean, the Alien films are a bit that way, but you can have some fun amongst the horror.
I actually think, in talking about things, you know, fun within the Alien franchise, because when they're examining Rafe Spall's body here, Rafe Spall, who I just saw, I literally just watched the other day in Men in Black International, a film I forgot the second it ended. It was so inconsequential as a thing. I was like, I guarantee you, a year from now, I will forget that this exists.
Yeah.
It's just nothing to cling on to there.
He was also in the BFG, which was actually quite a cute movie, and it's good to see him in other things.
I always weirdly get him mixed up with an actor called, ironic enough for like an Alien LinkedIn thing, a guy called Dallas Roberts, who was in like 310 to Yuma and stuff. And this is just something about those two guys. I think there's like a 15-year difference in age between them, but they just look so similar that I'm like...
Oh, yeah, I could definitely see it.
It's like every time I see either of them, I'm like, is that the guy from, is he the Walking Dead guy or is he the Prometheus guy? It's like, it's hard to, I don't know. Sometimes it's just like, it turns out that actually like Rafe Spall was a creation of Dallas Roberts, where he's pretending to be like a 25 year old man or something when he's actually like 30, 35.
Yeah, and he's got the southern accent going on and he's actually British.
I'd be like, fair play, dude. You kind of tricked everyone through just people being a bit confused. It's like, is that the same fella? Or is it? It can't be the same guy, right?
Well, that and Logan Marshall Green looks like Tom Hardy, so this movie's just full of lookalikes.
And again, yeah, even that, and then Upgrade and Venom are such similar movies. If you look into now, like, oh, what was the original, like, oh, it's only a cat jump scare, apparently, according to Google, it's Alien.
Wow.
Like, they say that's the first time with Jones, it was the first time to happen, with a cat in particular. And some people will be like, well, it's happened in freaking Star Trek and stuff before that. And, you know, the debate about it online. I just kind of thought, because this is another weird subversion of, like, you know, unless freaking Jones himself came out of Raceball's mouth, which would have been a welcome treat of like, hey, it's the cat from the first movie somehow.
That's a very old cat. Oh, so I should say for listeners. So it's Yannick, Ford, and Chance, and they've just turned Milburn over, and they've noticed something moving in his mouth. And it's before they can really absorb what they're seeing. Yeah, the hammerpede just shoots out of the mouth and skitters across back into where it came from, and it doesn't seem very interested in humans at all.
Yeah, you know, because again, though, if we were to take it that indeed Ridley Scott was one of the first ever to do the, you know, whoa, like jump scare with a cat, he's kind of he's kind of playing on the same thing of us like, oh, it's the thing that came out that you thought was dangerous, but it's not. Like, it is dangerous, but it just zips off and doesn't actually bother anybody.
What we're finding in this minute, or your minutes, I should say, the past three, there's a lot of subversion going on here. Because I think leading up to it, it's just, it's all set up with, I mean, okay, so you do get some familiar beats from Alien and Aliens with a crew getting ready, going off into space, all that. But for the most part, it wasn't subverting anything, or it wasn't doing anything too iconic. But now we're sort of getting into the thick of it. We're actually at the middle point of the film. So now it's just like, oh, chest bursters and jump scares and all these things you know. But not quite the same.
Mm.
And the other one, so, you know, everyone's freaking out trying to get Holloway back to the ship. And Ellie says to the Prometheus, Vickers answers, she says that Holloway is sick, and Vickers is just like, sick with what?
I feel this movie's going to be like a kind of low on the alkalides for Charlize Theron. And like, of all the great movies she's done, she's probably not thinking about, like, no one ever talks about me in Prometheus. The thing is, she's really great in this movie. Like,
she's so good. I would like, I've been playing around with this idea that after doing movies by minute, I'd love to go through actors' filmographies and see what they tend to gravitate towards, what their strengths are, how a director uses them, and so on. Mm. And a friend of mine does one called ScarJo a Go-Go. so he all of Scarlett Johansson's. He actually made me way more of a fan than I was before. Because I was like, oh, you know, I like Black Widow, she's cool. But actually seeing the kinds of projects she chooses and how she's used in them was really fascinating. And so I'd love to do one of either Charlize Theron or Fassbender, because both of them, pretty much out of the gate, strong, fearless actors. They got some big, meaty parts, even early in their careers. So, yeah.
Mm. The thing is, I've always had a thing for Scarlett Johansson, just because when I was a teenager, came out at the right time, I was a huge fan of Ghost World.
Oh, yes.
And of course, she's a one of the co-leads in that. Although I'm always like, why not Thora Birch? Why Scarlett Johansson? Why is she getting all the stardom?
Yeah.
The thing is, because I know she's gotten in a bit of hot water controversy recently, Scarlett, because of just kind of saying, like, I should be able to play whoever the hell I want, basically. And then having to backtrack her comments and stuff. But I do have to respect her, though, as an actress, because she always does go for everything. Every project she seems to gravitates toward is always interesting. It's always just like,
yeah, they're challenging, they're weird, they're really out there. I don't know how that particular role would have worked, because that gangster character based on a real guy. I looked him up. It's like he's very fat and he's very ugly. So like you want like Danny DeVito, you know, what is Scarlett, one of the most beautiful women on earth is gonna, I mean, I guess Charlize Theron did the,
oh, the monster. Yeah. So
monster. That's what it was called. Yeah. So I guess if you want,
Scarlett just gets so much respect from me for like something like, Under the Skin, which is just like such a
holy shit.
Yeah. It's such a strange project, but she was just so like, yep, I'm 100% okay. I'm perfectly content to drive around Scotland for you so we can kind of half improvise these scenes, hoping the Scottish people aren't like, aren't you Scottish? Aren't you like Black Widow? Like, what the hell are you doing driving around here? And it's like, I'm also doing it while dressed up as Mick Jagger in performance. It's just really quite a, such a...
I need to watch that again.
That's, I think that's one of the best soundtracks to anything I've heard in the past 20 years. Like the soundtrack to Under the Skin.
It's one of those ones that everyone else is ripping off, like one season of American Horror Story, it was just Under the Skin.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, I think actually the closest it's come to like something that's also in that same vein but doing something different actually is Annihilation, because the soundtrack, that's also...
Holy shit. It just, these soundtracks make you feel something, like there's not even a word for it. You just go, oh, this is taking me to some alien place that there are no words for.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so tying it back in. So the minute ends with setting up what is quite a familiar scene, or it echoes one at least, where in Alien, Dallas and Lambert are dragging Kane's unconscious body back to the Nostromo. And at this point, it does play out pretty much the same, but it has been subverted. So the most notable detail is Vickers ends up going out there and murdering Holloway herself. I don't think Ripley would ever have done that to Kane. I guess they can get away with that, though, because this, Prometheus has a bigger cast. So if you kill off someone in this way, it's like, okay, it's fine. There are other people that we can impregnate and rape and mutate.
It's almost too big a cast, because like, towards the end, when there's like... when they get ready to crash the ship, and it's just like, oh yeah, it's Benedict Wong. I forgot he was in this. It's just like, yeah, he's just sitting there.
Yeah, Benny Wong's in this. Yeah. They got a lot of people just before they got really famous, which is interesting. I like that, though. I mean, he really talks about a lot that he tends to... he likes watching fairly obscure things, and then he, and Guillermo del Toro does that as well, where he just goes, oh, I really love this actor, and they would be perfect, and they basically write the role for that fairly obscure actor. And it, I prefer that. And I've mentioned this before, Alien is a very small movie. It is, you've got, you know, the claustrophobia of it. You've got one face hugger, you've got one xenomorph, but that is the biggest, most monumental threat in the world of these characters that they live in. And, you know, Aliens, it's sort of the big action blockbuster. And, you know, it kind of loses that quality. And Prometheus does the same thing, where you lose that claustrophobia. But you can also do horror on a big scale. And I kind of like... it's fun to see Ridley working on that big scale and seeing what he can do with a somewhat similar premise.
Yeah, yeah. No, now that, like, you know, closing thoughts on Prometheus, but like, I think I'm just...
I think we're about at our conclusions. Yeah.
I think I actually do, like, it's a weird movie because it's very flawed, but it is just more like, having read the Alien Engineer script, I'm like, yeah, they just should have made this. It's just like, it's the same, but it gives you the satisfaction of being an alien movie as well. So I think it's not to lay everything on Damon Lindelof's door, because he gets enough crap as it is, but it is kind of his fault if it's him and Ridley in tangent, I guess, for just been like, let's vague it up a bit. I'm like, don't vague it up a bit. It was fine the way it was.
Yeah, I wonder, because I've watched the Furious Gods documentary all 2 hours or however many. It's real long. And it's never entirely clear to me where the redirection came from, because it started off as an Alien prequel, and then all of a sudden, they get another writer in, and they totally change direction. Well, not totally, but they do change direction quite significantly. Why? I mean, I'd assume the studio, Fox, would also like it to tie in more directly to a known franchise. I've got no explanation for that.
Unless it was just a thing of, like, we're hoping to make more of them, and we want to, and, like, Damon Lindelof's experience on TV is, like, you just tease things and then make people think it'll pay off later. And he just did that too much. It's like, you know, he's like, if you give them the Xenomorphs now, they might not come back for the next one. It's like, people will come back for them. Like, don't worry, you can give us the full dinner. We'll come back tomorrow for another dinner, you know?
Yeah, like, we already proved that with the other Alien branch of the franchise, that, you know, you can have Sigourney come back over and over again fighting Xenomorphs, and people will watch it. And with this prequel trilogy, it could have just been Alien Engineers, and then Alien Covenant, and then... But thank you very much for helping me smash through 3 episodes.
Oh, no problem. I've enjoyed it immensely. So, of course, Connor, you're more than welcome to come on for Bat Minute Forever.
Hell,
when we start
yeah.
that up later in the year. So,
I have a lot to say about the Riddler for some reason. He was my favorite Batman villain as a child. Don't ask me why. He sucks. So, this is Colson signing off. You can find me on travingdesigns.com, TRAVAAN, or read this by minute on Facebook. And one last time, Niall, where can we find you?
Yeah, you can get me on Bat Minutes, where we're analyzing the Batman movies 1 minute at a time. And we're available on all podcatchers, iTunes, and all the social medias, as far as I'm aware. And yeah, you know, if you just cast your net for Bat Minutes, you should catch us fairly easily, I would hope.